Hour number two, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser, the reporter, here with you on this Thursday. Adam in Portland commented on my rant, said, I always tell myself I'm going to tell them no when they tell me to pull ahead and then smile and I pull ahead anyway. And then I'm disappointed in myself the whole rest of the night. Can relate, for sure.
I'm sure we all can.
Before we get into the Titans and moving up, I did want to mention, we didn't bring this up, they did sign Chris Moore, a veteran wide receiver, yesterday, who had been the last 2 years with the Houston Texans, had his by far his best season last year with 548 yards with Houston. I like this signing. I mean, this is what they were going to get. You know, they were never going to go big in free agency, I didn't think they were going to go trade for, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Still believe they need to draft, obviously, maybe two, you know, receivers, but bringing in another veteran guy that maybe can do a little bit for you on the cheap, thought this was the kind of move they needed to make.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday and I thought, okay. I mean, veteran presence in the locker room, he had his best season last year in 2022 with the Houston Texans, a guy who's been in the league for a bit now, was drafted with the Ravens in 2016, but this move does not mean they don't need to draft wide receivers because you still don't have, I mean, I put him at a wide receiver three.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Nick Westbrook, Kine, four, you still need to get your two. And that's betting on the fact that Treylon Burks can be your number one game changer guy. He's a solid piece that'll be able to give you some production out there. But I looked at it as, okay, you need depth at that position. That's important. The guy's been in the league a couple of years. He's been efficient. Last year was his best season. So another piece, but that still doesn't mean that they don't need to go out and draft at least two guys.
Yeah, and I thought they might do that last year, and I mean, I guess they did. Yeah, they drafted Burks and Kyle Phillips. But yeah, I mean, I think they need to do it again. So
add him to the list.
But they only have six picks, so you know that's going to be the thing. Do you spend two on receiver and then offensive line and
two on a quarterback or question mark there?
Do they move up? Do they move up to get a quarterback? And that's where the price, I think, is going to decide everything. I mean, there has to be if you're going to move into the top five, it's going to cost you a lot to do that. But I also think there has to be a walk away price. Like when you walk on a car lot, you know you're going to spend a lot of money because you're buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying a new car, but everybody has that price where it's like, man, I really want this car, but I just can't pay that. And you walk away. And a lot of times the dealer will chase you out the door and, you know, you'll get something worked out. But the draft can work like that. I mean, you know, Rand Carthon might be on the phone with Monty Austinfort, and Monty Austinfort's like, nah, I want this. And he's like, man, I can't do it. And hangs up the phone, and then 2 minutes later he calls back and goes, okay, what about this?
Yeah, and especially the closer we get to draft day, a week from today, there are clearly conversations going on behind the scenes right now with different organizations on how much would it cost to move up to two? How much would it cost to move up to three, to four, to five? I mean, Dane Brugler said on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, the Tennessee Titans have been making calls inquiring about picks two through six. So, you know, however you wanna look at that, calls are being made and they're inquiring, okay, what would it cost us to move up to here? You know, what are some of the other packages people are willing to offer to move up to pick number two? But Chase, as you mentioned, everybody has a limit. We're not going above this because we don't believe that maybe this player's ceiling warrants a price like that. But as you get a little bit closer to the draft day or even draft day in itself, people will put their heels in and they'll dig their heels in and they'll say, okay, we're not going up any further, and it'll be the team with the pick or with the player's decision on, okay, yeah, we'll make that deal. We'll make that. But when it comes to people trading up to the second overall pick and the third overall pick, I have a feeling those are going to be very, very, first off, big packages because there are so many teams right now that need quarterbacks. And now hearing that C.J. Stroud isn't viewed maybe to the Texans as a QB1 or a ready starter, but maybe another team does believe it and they don't want the Colts Colts to get him at 4?
Right. Trevor Maddich comes on with Stillman and Company every Tuesday at 4:30, and Jared asks him the question that if he was the Titans, would he be willing to pay the price to move up?
Do you think that if you're the Titans, and we've talked a lot about trading up to 3 for a Richardson or trading up for a Levis, if you're the Titans and you think that this Adam Schefter stuff is for real, do you pick up the phone and call Arizona? And maybe you weren't willing to meet the asking price when it came to Richardson, but would you be willing to pay the higher asking price for Stroud?
If I'm the Titans, yes. The reason is that I think Stroud's going to be a very good quarterback in this league. Should he be picked in the top 3? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know my opinion about quarterbacks in general in the first half of the first round. But I think he and Bryce Young are the two guys that are the best risks for that. And keep in mind that whether you think he should go at number 3 or he should go at number 15, if you think he's your guy for the next 10 years, you take him. You get him. And the Titans have had a front row seat to the Texans and the Colts being in quarterback wasteland year after year after year. And I'm sure the Titans are thinking, okay, we know we've got one more year out of Ryan Tannehill. We need to get our guy for the future locked into that number 2 spot and ready to go while Tannehill's still here so that we don't have to throw him to the wolves like they did with Malik Willis this year because of injury to Tannehill. So if that scenario occurs like you mentioned, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Titans found a way to move up and draft C.J. Stroud. To move up and draft anybody other than Young or Stroud, though, I would turn purple and burst.
That was Trevor Maddich on Tuesday talking about that. So
we need a camera on him if they get anybody other than C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young.
I know, and look, he has been very adamant about that. And Trevor's, you know, I said this the other day that, you know, guys like Trevor and Tim that have been on this station basically since we began as a sports station, there's a reason for that. I mean, he knows his stuff. But I think that, you know, the C.J. Stroud part in all of this and whether he's fallen down or what have you, you know, that is the maneuvering that happens this time of year. It's also the, you know, have they discovered something that isn't public yet, you know?
Well,
that could be it.
How much does S2 testing mean to you and your organization? I think that's a huge factor, right? How much does that mean to the Tennessee Titans? I know that analytics weren't a huge part of it, a part of the organization before, but with Rand Carthon now and seeing the scores that successful quarterbacks have had in the league, how much does that mean to you? The Panthers have come out and said, S2 means a lot to us. Hence the reason that they're going with Bryce Young, who got a 98 on the test. I mean, that's not the only reason, no, but it definitely plays a part into it.
So I've decided that, you know, look, we asked the question earlier that I'd be almost more surprised at this point if they didn't take a quarterback with all this chatter out there. So I've kind of prepared myself for that being the possibility. But there is one scenario involving the quarterback that I've decided I would not be a fan of. We will discuss that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How is anyone convinced of what they know what this guy is?
Because he's been in-house. You go through the draft process, and it's one of my favorite things to ever hear. And you and I we just talked about S2, right, last week on this show. And that's a cognitive scoring, you know, test now, right? And so Trey Lance, you go through the draft process, and I remember hearing, oh, he's so great on the board. He's so great on the whiteboard. And there has to be an ability to transfer what you can do in the classroom and regurgitating things and then going out and playing the game and showing your ability to still be not great on the board but being great in real life when you have all these things flying around you. So I think – remember, not only have they seen him on the field, but they've seen him in practice for a really long time. And the last time I was through there in practice when Trey Lance was healthy and throwing the football, he was having a hard time hitting the broadside of a barn. Like, he's very inaccurate in practice. And I'm like, wow, this isn't – I remember going through that practice and going, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be their starting quarterback. There's no way the way this guy's playing right now that even though they brought Jimmy Garoppolo back under weird, awkward circumstances – that Lance isn't ultimately going to be the guy. or that Jimmy's not going to ultimately be the guy, and that's what happened. So,
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, earlier today on Robbie and Rex Road, fantastic interview every week at 8 on Thursdays. If you miss it, just head to thegamenashville.com. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. He also, because basically the whole first segment was on Trey Lance. Mm-hmm. And I have decided that if this time Friday next week, Trey Lance is on the Tennessee Titans, I'm going to be disappointed. And I already was kind of hesitant on it, you know, when it was out there. I wasn't really a fan. Now, if you can fleece them and say, here's Malik Willis for Trey Lance, then okay, maybe I'm willing to listen to that.
Story. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not giving up. You got 6 draft picks. And so, like, I'd part with some of that if I'm moving up to 2 to get C.J. Stroud mm-hmm. and maybe even Anthony Richardson. I don't want to give up one of those, even if it's like a 5th, to get this guy that, you know, really is probably going to be a bust.
Yeah, because
at this point.
Because if you're mortgaging draft capital to move up to get one of these young guys, you're also resetting the quarterback clock. Whereas Trey Lance, yes, is young, but you're not resetting that quarterback clock because he's already been in the league for 3 years, and then he has a year left, and then are you going to pick up that 5th-year option? And then mm-hmm. even if he's a decent quarterback, he's going to want a huge contract that you're probably not going to want to give him if he's not at the level of, you know, what he was expected to be at. I think something interesting, because I really was on the Trey Lance train for a while. I thought a couple weeks ago, wow, I mean, if you could only give up a 3rd-round pick, I mean, you gave up a 3rd-round pick for Malik Willis. I understand it was during the draft, you're in a different situation, and the 49ers were interesting because they ended up finding Brock Purdy and he ended up surpassing their expectations, and they mortgaged so much because they believed Trey Lance could be an elite quarterback in this league. And you have Rand Carthon now on your side, and he knows what he's like inside the building. He knows some of those intangibles of how does he lead? What is his work ethic like? How does he act in a locker room? And I think that was an advantage. And I thought, okay, if you believe this is your guy, you have more information because of Rand Carthon. But let's also remember, so do the Texans because of DeMeco Ryans, that you have more information than other people do around the league. But as Charles said, he's been in that locker room. Or I mean, not that locker room. He's been on the practice field. He's been in those practices. And he specifically said, and I kind of turned my head when he said that this morning. My ears perked up. He said, yeah, I watched him making some throws out there, even just in practice, and thought Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be the starter.
Well,
and that's where I turn my head and I think, okay.
Right, because he said he used that, one of my favorite phrases, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, which is a problem. And then the other thing that really stood out to me in that interview when talking about Trey Lance is he quoted, I think it was a personnel guy that he's talked to that said, be wrong quickly.
Yes.
And that, I'm like, whoa, what a line. Like, that is a good line. And I think that's probably where the 49ers are, that he can't stay healthy, and then there's stuff, you know, on the practice field. So do I think a team would probably take a chance on him? Yes, I do. Because you're always going to have teams that have a GM, or they have a coach, or they have a quarterback coach, or something like that, that are going to go, you know what, I'm better than them, so I can fix it. Mm-hmm. That always happens.
Well, and Charles Robinson also mentioned in the interview, he said, you know, Kyle Shanahan is a guy, he wants to be quickly right or wrong about somebody. And if it's not working, he's ready to move off of him. I mean, if you look at the 49ers offense too, they have a very quarterback friendly offense where you can plug in a guy. It's a lot of quick, short passes. That's why we've seen them be so successful with a non-elite quarterback, with a Jimmy Garoppolo, with a Brock Purdy. And, you know, you can assume that when you go up and you mortgage a lot for a quarterback like a Trey Lance and it's not working, there can be some frustration there.
Yeah.
But also to your point, Chase, it wouldn't surprise me if a team thinks, okay, you know what? Like, I look at the Giants, Brian Daboll, a really offensive-minded guy. Look what he was able to do with Josh Allen. Look what he was able to do with Daniel Jones this past year, and think, you know what? I like his skill set. I like what he has. I know that he's had some injuries, but I think we could work with him, and I think that it could work out here. But
yeah,
if you're looking at the Tennessee Titans right now, you have more of that information. Rand Carthon will know what he can and can't do. But I go back to, the guy hasn't played football in a really, really long time. He didn't play his senior year. He's been injured. He played two, I think, NFL games last year, a preseason one against the Packers, and then he got hurt in the Chicago game that was in a monsoon in Chicago. So he's been in the league over 3 years now, didn't play his senior year in college because it was the COVID year, and he's getting older and older and older and doesn't have the reps to show it. So that's my concern as well.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I think the majority of the fan base would probably agree with us. But, you know, again, there's also that group, that segment of the fan base that is so done with Tannehill and just wants something different that they might be all for it. And here's the other thing. I made the halfway joking but halfway serious that there are, you know, are coaches around this league that are like, well, you know what, I can fix it. Charles London and Tim Kelly and Mike Vrabel, you know, they might look at a guy like Trey Lance, and Rand Carthon could be in there going like, guys, I'm telling you, if you do this the right way, the kid's legit. And he could be a really good fit. He could be selling that behind the scenes. We don't know.
Yeah, and there also could be just frustration in San Francisco of things aren't working out right now. There's getting to be some frustration between coaches. You know, he's been injured. It's just not working out. And sometimes a new environment can change that. And it's a fresh start, right? And you go into a different system. And maybe they do believe that. But the extra oomph that the Tennessee Titans have is having Rand Carthon in this building, because he knows, and he can say to Mike Vrabel, and he can say to Tim Kelly and Charles Lund, and he can say, okay, here are his strengths, X, Y, and Z. Here's what he's not good at, this, this, and this. And they can say, okay, well, you know, I think we can fix this, or, you know, whatever it may be. And then here are his intangibles. Here's what he brings to the table. Here's what he's like, and all of those things. But it is a risk because he already has been in the league for a couple of years. And essentially, you're betting that in 1 year, he should be your starter because you need to figure out what he is. You don't want him to sit for another year. And then you have to figure out, okay, do we take that fifth-year option? Which is an interesting conversation, because I do think if you were to go and get Trey Lance, you want him to be your starter now.
Yeah, but see, that, and they're not going to do that. They got Tannehill. Tannehill's not going anywhere.
Unless
I will be,
it was a trade with Trey Lance to the 49ers.
Which the 49ers wouldn't take that. They'd be stupid to take that. I mean, they just signed Darnold, and Purdy will be back eventually.
They got to tell Brock Purdy not to be doing interviews saying, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be back this season.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't want to take that money either. I mean, there's a lot there. But I wonder what's more likely. That Rand Carthon, you know, they all sat around and they talked about it, and he was like, hey, pass. You know, kid, he's not it. Move on to something else. Or he tried to sell him on it. Of like, nah, listen, I scouted him, you know, worked with him. He's a good kid. I think he, you know, we can improve on a few things here. I'm kind of wondering if at this point it's like, nah, pass, let's move on. With all the chatter of, like Dane Brugler saying this morning, that they've made calls about 2 through 6.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the 49ers, I mean, when it gets out by Ian Rapoport and the big network guys bring out this information, the way I look at it is, okay, the 49ers want people to know that, hey, we're open for business, because
right,
people don't know what's going on with Brock Purdy. I understand they signed Darnold, so it's a really interesting situation, but the 49ers are clearly trying to get off of him and not have to sign him to, you know, a fifth-year deal and move him on to another.
Well, they're trying to – I mean, they don't have to sign that fifth-year option. They can just move on and get nothing for him, but they're trying to get something
but
for him.
But they're trying to get – that's what I mean. Yeah. They're trying to get something for him.
Yeah, and look, they probably will. I just hope it's not here.
Yes, I agree.
You know, if they – if – again, I have subscribed to the fact that they could take a quarterback. And a lot of people on the this is true. A lot of people on the text line will bring this up and say, look, you know, I understand the idea of looking at a quarterback of the future, but you got to fix the offensive line. 100% right. If the offensive line sucks, it doesn't matter who's behind center. So they've improved it, but they haven't fixed it.
Well, we think they've improved it.
Well, on paper, yeah.
Yes.
But they haven't fixed it. So that is, you know, that's kind of the thing. That's where they're at. But I'm so glad this thing is so close so we can get some answers.
Yeah.
Friday morning of
five
the 28th.
Five more days.
Yeah, but like the well, yeah, but Friday morning the 28th, I will be so happy because we'll have something to talk about.
How about this? Five more shows.
Yes. Yes. So, but and again, we have great draft coverage for you here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You can join Jared Stillman, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders as they will be at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29 Degree Draft Beer, on Thursday, April 27th for our first night of draft night in Nashville. And I hope I'm right and it's crazy and something really good happens and gives us a lot to talk about. That would
Me
be
too.
Fantastic. Speaking of fun and crazy, the NHL playoffs have not disappointed to this point. We'll talk to Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, get his thoughts on all the happenings in the playoffs up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezevic, Nick Kieser with you. Usually at 9:45 on Thursdays, we chat with Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, but he joins us now. Greg, what's up? How you doing?
What's up? Yeah, I was shipping down from Boston to Bristol after last night's game. We got our show, The Drop, tonight in the Anarta Ocal at 6:30 Eastern. So it's been fun, man. I was in Boston for the first two games, and I what felt like a coronation in Beantown all of a sudden has a little bit of intrigue to it. That's exciting.
It does, and I'll be honest with you, that was my surprise of the evening because somebody asked me, "Hey, what are your thoughts on the games tonight?" And I was like, "I like Carolina. I love Boston. Give me Dallas all day. Give me Edmonton all day." And I mean, obviously Carolina needed overtime to get the win, but the Florida Panthers surprised me last night. Had a little oomph in them.
Yeah, no kid. Yeah, the Carolina one wasn't a surprise because that every game in that series is going to be like a one goal game that goes to overtime, or so it feels. But you know, the Boston game is interesting because if you ask the Bruins, there were some problems in their game in Game One where they allowed the Panthers to carry play at times, and then in Game Two. They just didn't seem like themselves. I mean, their coach Jim Montgomery last night said they were trying to force things too much offensively. The turnover situation for them last night was completely out of whack from what you'd expect from Boston in the regular season. They had 15 turnovers last night, many of them, as their coach said, catastrophic, which I don't know if that's a Panthers reference or not, but it was a pretty good line. So the Florida goes back home now 1-1. And with a little bit of momentum, they got to feel pretty good about their game, and especially feeling good about getting Sam Bennett back in their lineup, a guy that plays the type of north-south go-to-the-net game that you need to play against Boston, and he scored a real big first goal for them.
Greg Wyshynski is with us from ESPN. Now, I did think this last night when I – because the game that I was really looking forward to was going to be Dallas and Minnesota, because I just knew that was going to be a physical one. But what in the blue hell was Dean Evason thinking by going to Fleury?
Man, you know, I didn't get to see what his ultimate justification was. I know before the game there was some thought about maybe they wanted to give Gustafson a little bit of a breather after playing double overtime. Obviously, it's his first playoff run as a starter. They've platooned their goalies all season, so there's some justification for that. But, you know, Fleury's not Fleury anymore, and clearly the Stars had a mission last night, which is to prove that they are still a viable offensive team without Joe Pavelski in the lineup, and I think they proved the case pretty emphatically last night. The good news, obviously, is that they can come back with the kid in Minnesota in a 1-1 series and feel pretty confident that they know what they're going to get out of him. But they could have really, really put the screws to the Dallas Stars by going up 2-0 in that series, and the goaltending call contributed to the loss last night.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is on with us. Greg, Tampa takes the first game against the Maple Leafs. What is going to happen to the city of Toronto if they don't come out of this first round?
Well, I mean, the good news is that they're used to it, right? So they know how to handle all of it.
A little too used to it.
But it is different. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that this was the first time in this stretch of years for Toronto, the first time in a long time where they were the heavy favorite going into the series. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, look at the ESPN prognostications. Most people were on the Maple Leafs. I think that was the same case for a lot of places. They were favored in Vegas in the series. And there was a notion that, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning were going to be the victims of lineup attrition, having lost so many key players from their cup wins to the team that they have now. Now, what's interesting is that that attrition theory could still prove out to be true depending on what happened with their defense core. You know, they lost Eric Chernak. They lost Essamant. Hedman's questionable for game two. You could be down half your blue line in the second game of the series, and all of a sudden that could really change the complexion of things. And it makes you wonder what life would be like if Hedman goes down, oh, but you still have Ryan McDonagh. So the idea that this ain't the same Lightning could still play out in this series, but for one game, they were the same Lightning. It was Point and Kucherov and Vasilevskiy, mm-hmm. and the Leafs being haunted by their playoff demons once again.
So I said this yesterday, and I want to know if you agree with me or not, but I said to Michelle, look, if Toronto somehow loses this series, and I don't know, you know, I didn't know going into it if that meant Sheldon Keefe was fighting for his job or not, but Toronto fans are going to be pissed off at the Predators for hiring Barry Trotz to be the general manager, because I bet you that would have been the hot name for Toronto.
It might have been. Who knows if he wants to go there and put himself through that. I mean, they clearly would compensate him for it. But if the Leafs go out and won, it is total regime change. And it could go all the way up to Brendan Shanahan, the team president. Like, one of the biggest, buzziest things happening in NHL circles right now is the notion that Kyle Dubas, the current general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, could end up in one of the two open positions with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm. I think that's very much a, hey, the Fenway Group once hired Theo Epstein to fix the Red Sox. So logically, they'd hire Kyle Dubas to fix the Leafs. That, you know, boy genius kind of thing. So we'll see what happens there. But clearly, if the Leafs don't make it out, Dubas doesn't have a contract beyond this season. You'd expect there to be massive changes behind the scenes in trying to once again figure out what went wrong. And that's good fodder for the Toronto media for at least the next several months.
And all of us hockey media. Oh, good yeah. Fodder for everybody. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN on with us. Greg, I know we touched on the Maple Leafs and their organization, but what other, whether it be a coach or a team, do you think has the most pressure on them heading into, or just in the playoffs in general, to be somewhat successful, you know, make it out of the first round, make a deep run?
There's two. One is Edmonton, who mm-hmm. got a desperate win last night against the Los Angeles Kings. Played really good defensively in the first period, then did what they do, which is allow the Kings to find life in the second and then close the deal in the third. So they've got to be feeling at least a little bit better about themselves, although Connor McDavid going two games without a goal is a little bit disconcerting. The other one is the Boston Bruins, which sounds crazy, you know, because they were a record-breaking team in the regular season. But having spent a few days in Boston, I can tell you there's a special kind of pressure that comes with being this team, because you are either going to wire the field and win the Stanley Cup and go down as perhaps the greatest team in NHL history for a single season, or you're going to end up like a footnote like the Lightning when they lost to the Blue Jackets, or a footnote like the New England Patriots when they went 16-0 and then lost in the Super Bowl. So
yeah.
It's a very unique pressure on the team that is the hunted. And I think the Boston Bruins, based on these first two games, are certainly feeling it.
Greg Wyshynski joining us now. Are you going to be in Jersey tonight for game two?
Well, we're doing our show from the studios in Bristol, so I will not in Jersey for game two, but I will be there for games three and four at the Garden. I will also be there for games three and four at UBS for the Islanders and Carolina. I imagine those two series will be quite different when experiencing them in person. But it's going to be a blast. The big story tonight with Jersey and the Rangers, obviously, is whether or not the Devils are all grossed up, whether or not they're going to be over their game one jitters. You had a bunch of guys playing their first game. I thought the best line of the week came from Lindy Ruff after that loss, where he said, well, the good news is that now everybody has played a playoff game. the key to the Devils in this series, my first key when I wrote about this was, are they going to freak out when they realize that a lot of their regular season tricks don't work in the playoffs? They did in game one, And now it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust, how they modulate their game, how they try to figure out ways to play with the speed and the electricity that they played in the regular season, because you could tell they just didn't have a solution for what the Rangers decided to throw at them in game one.
What's kind of your read on Seattle and Colorado? Because I think I was a little surprised that Seattle took game one. Obviously, we talked about the man that will go down as the first playoff goal scorer in Seattle Kraken history, Ellie Tolvanen. Mm-hmm. But what's kind of your thoughts on that series?
Really surprising in the sense that the Kraken had been trending in the wrong direction, both offensively and with their goaltending towards the end of the season. And yet, you know, their offense looked really good against Colorado, and Philip Grubauer began his revenge tour with a pretty strong effort. I did find it really interesting when Nathan MacKinnon was asked after game one if he had any thoughts about the game that Grubauer played, and he said he had nothing, just left it at that, which is a real emo MacKinnon moment, but also maybe some fodder for Grubauer for game two. Seattle's deep, and they can beat you in a number of different ways, and they showed that depth in that game against Colorado, an Avalanche team that is still trying to recover, I think, from some personnel losses last offseason and then losing Gabe Landeskog for the playoffs. So I don't think the Avalanche are in trouble. I think when you have MacKinnon and Rantanen doing what they did in game one, and they have Makar probably needing a game under his belt before he starts to really kind of cook again because he's been out with an injury for a while, they should be okay. But the Kraken showed the game plan and the recipe for potential upset in that series, and it wouldn't be out of the question now.
Well, it's fun already, and I know it's just going to get even better. But appreciate the time as always. Enjoy Bristol, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks,
anytime.
Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joins us every week, usually at 9:45, as these playoffs have certainly been entertaining to this point. And I'm just patting myself on the back with Edmonton and Dallas last night. I felt pretty good about both of those going the way that they did. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, too, I've talked to a few Preds fans that I feel like they're all in on Edmonton.
Oh, you got to root for Matthias Ekholm. And also,
Ecky,
if you are any sort of sports fan, to see, I know he hasn't scored a goal yet, but Connor McDavid, we need to see more playoff hockey from him, and they need to get in the next round. And,
well,
I mean, he's...
He set up Dreisaitl's goal last night. I mean, that was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
That whole sequence.
I am rooting to see more of him, and of course, you got to root for Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, Dreisaitl, you know, once again had a great game with 3 points. I think it was 3 points, but he set up Derek Ryan's first goal with a nice one, and then McDavid on the power play. I mean, that power play is just lights out to watch.
Lethal.
Yeah. So tonight, you know, all eyes will be on Tampa and Toronto, and the Rangers and Devils, and then got Seattle, Colorado, and then Winnipeg and Vegas will round things out tonight. Weird it's on TBS, but that on TBS tonight, I guess, because of the
There's
NBA
just so
playoffs.
Much happening.
Yeah,
so much
going on. We'll give you a full preview of all of that and the NBA here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Keyser, Steve Miller Band. In fact, you want to go see Steve Miller Band?
Yeah, do you? You better be listening right now.
Yes. All right. We're going to ask a question in a second. And you, the first person to tell Nick Keyser the answer will win a pair of tickets to see Steve Miller at First Bank Amphitheater April 30th. I was really into the Steve Miller Band in high school, which is like 40 years after they were popular. But
I love this song.
Take the money and run. This contest presented by Green Trees, a family-owned CBD and cannabis company in Hendersonville. And you can find them online at greentreescompany.com. Here's the trivia question. And as Michelle can attest to, I'm in a really good mood today.
Yeah,
I got sleep last night. I'm feeling good. I'm trying to have fun. I know there are people out there that just want sports talk and no fun. But, you know, I'm here to have fun. That's what I want to do. And so I'm going to be generous. The first person to tell Nick Keyser who was the first playoff goal scorer in Seattle Kraken history will win a pair of tickets to see Steve Miller Band at First Bank Amphitheater on April 30th. 615-737-1025. That's how I'm feeling today. So there you go.
You better get on. You better dial that number quick.
If the first person doesn't get that right, I'm really going to question a lot of things in life. But the NHL playoffs last night almost went exactly 100% the way that I thought it was. Boston was the only one that really surprised me. Florida put up a fight. Now, if I had to guess, I think Boston's going to take this in five. But you know. That last night, it was kind of like they got punched in the mouth, and now they're mm-hmm. bleeding a little bit. And you know, that's an analogy I like to use, that they look themselves in the mirror and they're like, oh, they see their own blood, and now it's just watch out. That's what I think is going to happen with Boston, because I think they're a buzzsaw. But I knew Dallas was going to be out for revenge. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it would be that much, because I didn't think Dean Evason was going to make a goalie change, but whatever. And I knew Edmonton would probably take care of business with L.A. So that went the right way in Carolina. That's a fun series.
Yes.
Tonight's a little more difficult, I think, to put a read on. I think Toronto's going to tie it up.
You better hope so.
I think New Jersey's going to tie it up.
They need to wake up.
I think Colorado's going to tie it up.
Yeah. I feel like that game is probably the most confident, I feel.
And I think Vegas is going to – I think all the series will be tied, but I'm probably going to be wrong on at least one.
On at least one of them. Well,
and if I am, I think it's Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg-Vegas is the one I could be wrong on.
I feel like Avalanche. I mean
– Yeah, maybe.
At the end of the day. But those would definitely be the two of them, Chase. Back to your Boston point, because we asked – Greg Wyshynski in the last segment about it, and he was in Boston for that game. And I asked him which organization outside of Toronto would have the biggest expectations or the most pressure on them. And he said Boston, which,
yeah, I like
you know,
that.
A part of you is like, wait, what? They already set a record in NHL history. But, and I brought this up to you. I said, is Boston the hardest sports town to play in and root for, because the expectations are so incredibly high? Hey, you can be one of the best teams ever, or
that's an interesting question.
But okay, I'm sorry, not the best team ever, but you know, you break an NHL record and have the opportunity to go down as one of the best teams ever if they go on and win the Stanley Cup, because we all know the President's Trophy curse of the likelihood of being able to keep up that consistency and go in and win all the way through the postseason and eventually win the cup is really hard. That's why the Stanley Cup is the hardest thing to win in professional sports. But I look at Boston and I'm like, you know, the Celtics have been really good, you know, the Patriots for however long, you know, got the Bruins, the Celtics are back at it again. I'm like, the Red Sox in there? I mean, come on, Boston. It's only one game.
I mean, yeah, but I would say, like, New York probably has the toughest media. Boston probably has the toughest fan base. Philadelphia could rival that on
yeah.
certain things.
Not Boston. New York is interesting because it's really just New York City, the market. Like, New York City, but it's national, so you whatever team is hot, you're talking about.
Yeah. By the way, Robbie is disagreeing with me. He thinks that the Devils are going to get swept.
Oh, I'm on Robbie's. I'm
and
on
that
Robbie's
the
train.
Rangers are quote a wagon.
Yeah, I think New Jersey got quite literally punched in the face, and they were sleepwalking, got punched in the face. But I have a feeling that the Rangers are just going
just
to dominate
don't, I don't,
this series.
I can't subscribe to that they're going to get swept.
You want it to be you want it to be right a close series, because it's New York, New Jersey, yeah. Right? People always want to see a series like that, but oh, the Rangers look good, and Patrick Kane didn't even get going really.
No, I mean, but you know, they are loaded. That's why I really was excited about these playoffs, because I feel like you have just storylines with every series so far. So that's the NHL tonight. NBA tonight, three games. So Philadelphia should go up. The 76ers should go up 3-0 on the Nets.
Yep,
I would think.
I feel pretty confident.
That's
in
Brooklyn, but. I would think that is going to happen for that one. And in fact, tonight on these airwaves, as I pull up my schedule, you can actually hear that game starting at 6:00 here on 102.5 The Game. So we got three straight nights of NBA playoffs on 102.5 The Game. So it should be fun.
Quick rant. I can't deal with the tomorrow's NBA games just being not good and tonight's being so good, but they're so late. Like, we need to flip-flop one of them, because we've got Warriors-Kings at 9, which has been a series I've been loving. And then another great series, 9:30, is Suns-Clippers.
That's been the best series, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure, because it's – I mean, talk about some great – we usually don't get great first-round matchups. I mean, I know there are some out there, like Celtics-Hawks. That one's not great right now, or you mentioned Philly and the Nets. But, I mean, the Clippers and the Suns, the Warriors and the Kings – even Memphis and the Lakers. I mean, we have some great series going on right now. And, right, some of these teams that are, like the Lakers were the seventh seed, but they had to play in. But they still have LeBron, so
yeah,
anything can happen. And Anthony Davis, and then you got Memphis, who's the 2 seed. Oh, these I love postseason NBA.
Yeah,
play.
So tomorrow we have Cavs-Knicks. And
that's a good series, too.
And Saturday, I did this just for you, Rob. Bucks, Heat.
Oh, yeah. I was disappointed that the Heat couldn't have capitalized off of the Bucks not having Giannis in last night. I think they ended up losing by 12 or something along those lines. Yeah. But
So I kind of think Golden State wins tonight. I think it's 2-1.
They are back in.
They're home. I think they lean on that.
Yeah, I talked in my Superbook read earlier. I have the Kings covering the 5.5, but the Warriors ultimately winning, and also Draymond's not in, which is ridiculous, and I will continue to say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Steph's going to have to go off, but I think he will. So I like it's 5.5. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked. So Sacramento is getting 5.5.
Yeah, the Warriors are favored by 5.5.
I'd lay the 5.5.
Yeah.
I'm laying the 5.5. Okay. I think Golden State has a statement win tonight. That's my
Now Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox will combine for about 75 points
probably.
Again.
and then Clippers Suns, oh, I don't know.
That series has to go to 7. And the part about it that is frustrating is Paul George isn't even playing for the Clippers.
No, I know. Let me ask this question. Why is this game on NBA TV?
Yeah. We were talking about that this morning. It's a 9:30 game. Why don't you...
Why is that not on TNT or ESPN?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't switch that with one of the Friday games that people don't really care about that much.
That makes zero sense.
Like the Nuggets and the Timberwolves, switch that one. Put that one 9:30 tonight and put...
Like, I get wanting to prop up NBA TV and do more with it and everything, but why... Why put a major playoff game like that on NBA?
Yeah,
TV?
They need to flex it. When they see which series are competitive, just flex. It's one day, and some teams are already getting so many rest days.
Yeah, I don't know. That is going to do it for us. Great show today. Appreciate the participation. But don't go anywhere. Caroline Willie and D-Mace, that is coming up next, because could C.J. Stroud actually end up in two-tone blue? They will discuss that to kick things off next. We're back at it tomorrow at 9 here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.